Campus FM presents My Pizza and Toffee Apples in the 1950s. Produced and presented by Patricia Salomone. In the long, quiet evenings before the advent of television, my father listened to the BBC News and my mother played Chopin on our piano. Her music drifted out through the open windows into the dark summer nights, lit up only here and there by the dim lights in the British military barracks opposite our home. Last week, I mentioned many of the characters who walked by our neighborhood in Quizisana. The ice cream man, the paraffin hawker with his horse, the old shell-shocked British airman, the boys from St. Patrick's, their hair shaven in their gray uniforms, the Cascia Musicale with its colorful dancing statuettes, the pious white nuns from the Little Sisters of the Poor. I remembered our Thursday visits to friends and relatives. But there were more of these dearly loved characters from the past who I will tell you about today. Thursdays also meant, especially when I was still very young and my little sister but a baby, a visit to Zia Laura. This lady seemed very old to me then. She was bent with a painful back, but she had the eyes of kindness and the smile of love. She was tender to my mother, who missed the warmth of her family in Italy. Zia Laura and my mother seemed to share something very important, which, I know now, was their being foreigners in a rather close society from which they felt quite excluded. It was a bond which tied them together closely because they shared a common sentiment, the nostalgia for the atmosphere and the people they had left behind. So, when we arrived at her home in Castelletti Street, Zia Laura busied herself preparing tea and cooking toast in her little kitchen, which was reached by a step from the pantry. Her husband, Ziu Zuzu, was a keen hunter and had an endless collection of stuffed birds with glassy eyes, which I avoided, frightened as I passed by them in their glass cases. The family lived in what I thought was a tower at the very top of an endless flight of steps. Often, as I stood in Zia Laura's galleria at sunset, a flight of pigeons swooshed by over and over again, as if coming from the heavens and going back to nowhere. We kept our fingers crossed, lest Ziu Zuzu came along with his shotgun to shoot those birds, stuff them, and shut them up in the showcases where their glassy eyes would scare the life out of us. But tea and toast were ready, and Zia Laura may have made some of her good Greek sweets, and I ran to the pantry room by the kitchen, where she was happy in the company of this old aunt and her three pretty daughters. It was cozy and warm and loving in there, around Zia Laura's table. Tea and toast are not a luxury, but when they come seasoned with love and warmth and kindness, the memory lingers on and on and on. Thursday evening was also, most frequently, the time for playing at our neighbor's, the Liberto family, who lived downstairs, at ground floor in flat 2.
Simpatia. Chi mi darà la forza di non vederti più? Tuttavia, mi devo rassegnare e dirti addio. Io lo so che troverai il coraggio di sorridere.
Uncle Franco, the father, would chase us kids around the house pretending to be il babbo, some sort of wicked monster that grabbed at us as we scrambled under the beds, over the settee, behind an armchair or on top of a table. The small apartment resounded with our excited screams, the joyful sound of young lives with no worries.
Simpatia, il tuo visino dolce, quanto mi mancherà. Casa mia, per te è sempre aperta, ritorna quando vuoi.
Nothing was forbidden, in the dining room and in the bedrooms, but there was a taboo, the sitting room. Here Uncle Franco kept his treasure, an entire orchestra of Capodimonte statuettes, perfect in their rococo gowns, with the clavier and the string instruments held in their delicate white hands. They danced in a circle over a clock each time the clock chimed. They were perfect, their china dresses trimmed in immaculate lace made out of china. The room held other treasures, which we were rarely allowed to behold. Stand at the door and don't touch. Behind the sofa, Uncle Franco had a cache of Italian foods, pastina al plasmon and sasso olive oil from Italy, all products that were hard to get in post-war Malta. But from his privileged position at the Italian consulate, he could stock up, and some of these delicacies reached my mother's kitchen, where she, desirous for the products she knew and missed, busied herself to cook all'italiana. When Christmas time came, Zio Franco, like my mother, celebrated in the Italian tradition and made his own presepe di carta pesta. Of course, this gave us much to argue about. Whose was the nicer of the two? Ours, of course. Now that so many years have gone by, I look back and assess the difference. Hers was the sculpture of a delicate hand, a woman's version, with its little caves and delicate columns, its pretty bridge and little Italian looking houses. His was a man's job, dark and imposing, and perhaps less welcoming. Both cribs were born out of love, and out of the same centuries-old tradition, that of the Saint of Assisi. But the new traditions were creeping in, and at Christmas that meant a Christmas tree, which was finding its place in every Maltese home, together with the giurbina and the baby Jesus, the talasel, the Christmas cake and the plum pudding. Uncle Franco's Christmas tree was huge. It towered above the corner sofa in all its glory. But when the front door was opened, the draught caused it to fall over, over and over again, which was no joke at all, for all the decorations in those days were made out of delicate, breakable, blown glass. Both Both Anna and Franco were Italian to their souls. They loved books and literature, Dante and Lodovico Ariosto. Both taught us their children Giacomo Leopardi's love verses.
Silvia, rimembri ancora quel tempo della tua vita mortale, quando beltà splendea negli occhi tuoi, ridenti e fuggitivi, e tu, lieta e pensosa, illimitare di gioventù salivi. Sonavan le quiete stanze e le vie d'intorno al tuo perpetuo canto, allor che all'opre femminile.
With equal pathos they told us of the tale of the Cavallina Storna and recounted the sentimental stories of De Amicis' Libro Cuore. Pinocchio was their favorite kid's tale. We were always warned not to tell lies, lest our noses would grow long, and to be diligent school children, lest we should grow donkey's ears. Mussolini was Franco and Anna's idol. When they got together, there were no two ways about it. They were simply lost in their Italianità. Franco and Anna spoke of Balilla and Camicie Nere, and they sang Eia, Eia, Alala. Stuck to the radio, she at flat 3C and he at 2C, while the team of their hearts played against England, a goal screamed on the wireless by Niccolò Carosio had them running towards one another along the stairs in a delirium of excitement, which culminated in a great crash halfway up the stairs, while all their progeny watched, listened, and learnt. By the mid-50s, Italian teams came over to play against Maltese football teams. At times they were accommodated, opposite our home, at the Tinia Court Hotel in Quiz. So we ran there with our autograph books in the hope of getting some precious signature. Of all the friends who shared my childhood years, the Libertos were certainly the ones who most enriched my imagination, shared most emotions, and left the fondest memories. Amongst the little black and white photos, indeed amongst some of the earliest coloured ones, there are the pictures of our first carnivals together. Bat and Isabella, Christina and Daniela, dressed as peasant girls with frilly aprons and flowers in our hair, or as fairies with transparent wings, we would be taken to the fancy dress balls for children at the Phoenicia Hotel ballroom, at the Chamber of Commerce, or in Slema at the Imperial Hotel. Of course, there were other children also. I remember stomping on the parquet floor of the Phoenicia ballroom to the music of Los Spirou, dressed as a poppy whilst my friend Madeleine was a sunflower. Another time we were two French mademoiselles, with black berets and red pom-poms, and with the Eiffel Tower embroidered on our black velvet bodies. Mums in those days used their imagination and sewing skills to produce little works of art that deserved much more admiration than they actually got.
That's what it's all about.
Right elbow.
You put your right elbow in, you put your right elbow out, you put your right elbow in, and you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
Left elbow.
Greatest of all treats at carnival was a visit to Zia Italia, Franco's sister, who lived in Valletta, and from whose window we could watch the carnival défilé, made up of King Carnival, followed by all the decorated trucks with their carnival companies in coloured fancy dress. The band marched by playing the new tunes from the recent Sanremo festivals, and Merryman was in his element dressed up as a woman, which after all was his favourite garb. The adults whispered things we could not understand, but we really didn't care. We were happy to watch and throw confetti onto the crowd below and eat Auntie Italia's carnival sweets covered in treacle.
Hokey pokey.
You do the hokey pokey.
The hokey pokey. You do the hokey pokey. That's what it's all about.
It was through Zio Franco that we got to know the Giorno family, with the twin girls who looked like one person split in two. It was Signor Giorno from the Italian consulate who took some of the most fascinating photos of my mother at the height of her womanhood. Sitting on the arm of the sofa with a crystal vase of flowers behind her, she looks intently at the camera. Slim and pale, she is wearing a strapless dress, very narrow at the waist, and with a very wide skirt. I am standing next to her, looking rather awkward, wearing a Dutch girl's coif and costume. My dainty sister is a fairy, with a star on her forehead and a wand in her hand. On a special occasion at the Giorno home, we met none other than Claudio Villa.
Buongiorno, tristezza, amica della mia malinconia.
Foreign stars visiting were rare in those days, so meeting Claudio Villa in our friend's sitting room in Quisisana was quite a privilege. I remember he sat at the edge of the armchair and sang exclusively for us, while the ladies served homemade sweets, strawberries and cream, and Signor Giorno, with his proverbial camera, immortalized the event. Uncle Franco's wife, Beatrix, was a Greek Maltese lady, quite special in her own way. She had an incredible, unforgettable Greek mother, Mrs. Galia, whose kurabiye rivaled and surpassed Theo Genie's by far. She also had a small, quiet Maltese father, Mr. Galia, who owned a factory making soft drinks, which, if my memory doesn't fail me, were called Kitty Cola. Mrs. Galia had a very catchy laugh, and we children would hide behind the sofa, waiting for her to laugh. We counted until she sent out her first cackle, and then we burst out in imitation. Ha! Hi!
Thank you.
grew up together. Myself and Isabella, my sister Daniela and hers Christina. Then, Beatrix and Franco enlarged the family with two boys. Franco had a brother, Carlo, who lived in Switzerland. During the war years, Carlo had been closely in touch with the Duce's regime. He lived in a sort of exile, writing poems about his beloved land, Malta, terra irredenta. In the Liberto family, there was a sort of veneration for this man, and I remember the preparations when, one day, he was to visit with his wife. The home was cleaned and polished from top to bottom. Broken glass panes were repaired and replaced. The Capo di Monte statuettes were washed and polished. All was ready for the guest's arrival, and the adults had left us alone at home while they took a taxi to the airport. Well, what did I, Pat La Grossa, notice? I noticed a black fly spot on the glass pane of the show window. And, of course, Miss Jack of All Trades decided to clean it.
Simpatia. Chi mi darà la forza di non vederti più?
I must have been a particularly strong child, for no sooner did I touch the glass than it cracked into a thousand pieces. And Zio Carlo arrived home to find that the showcase was broken, which after all was how it habitually was. But I shall never forget Uncle Franco's face as he opened the front door and stepped into the room.
Segnare e dirti addio. Io lo so che troverai il coraggio di sorridere, anche se due lacrimone scure ti scenderanno giù per via della matita blu.
A large family now with four children, they moved from the small apartment to a large house close by in Tignier. Although no outing was more thrilling than a visit to their new home, their moving away was a changing point in our lives.
Simpatia, il tuo visino dolce, quando mi mancherà. Casa mia, per te è sempre aperta, ritorna quando vuoi. Mi mancheranno le tue risate belle, per le mille storielle che io inventavo per te.
Somehow I seem to remember that it was so very cold in those winters. Children at school had chilblains, and our legs were always blue with cold. A walk from our home in Quiz to Diliberto's new home in Tignier meant wearing scarves and caps and gloves and running as fast as we could not to get too cold. Their new home was large and spacious and set on two floors. But perhaps because we were getting older, the magic somehow was gone. The Quizisana days were gone, and with them was gone our childhood forever. There is still so much to say about our days in Quisisana together with the Libertos. So be back with me next week. Until then, goodbye.
Mi mancheranno le tue risate belle, per le mille storielle che io inventavo per te. E ridevamo insieme, senza sapere che ci sfiorava la felicità, la felicità, la felicità.